Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Spokespeople Podcast. I am your host, Dave, with our other host.
Also Dave.
There you have it. Two Daves, no waiting.
Two Daves. All day long.
All day long, no waiting.
At least probably 45 minutes.
Eh.
Give or take.
You may need a nap in the middle of the day,
yeah,
so we'll take that into consideration.
I brought some vitamins. I'm good to go.
Excellent. I can smell the chili cheese Fritos
from across the table, by the way. That's how I get my groove.
You get your potassium and your sodium and stuff?
Mostly the sodium.
That works.
Yeah.
So welcome back, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed the show so far. We are at episode number 17.
17. On the edge of. That's a great song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good tune. So we're lucky here today because we actually have a special guest. We've been kind of kicking it around privately with ourselves on who we wanted to bring in. And he came into the shop the other day, technically yesterday, to be honest with you. And I said, hey, do you have time to do a podcast? We want to really get you on there and talk to you about it.
And he didn't say no immediately, so.
No, he didn't.
Here we are.
I've had other people, you know, give me single finger gestures and things like that when I've asked them. And
the thumbs down that the Fonz used to do?
You know, I pointed upward. It was more vertical. So, but in this case, we have Seth Merrick.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. Are you nervous at all?
No, I'm not nervous.
Yeah, I mean, sitting that close to Randleman, I would be. That's why he has to keep his hands on the table at all times. We require that of him. So Seth is, we've been trying to figure out how we define Seth.
Local extremist. That's what I'm just going to go with. I'm going to keep it going with that.
He does do some extreme races and competitions.
He's pretty extreme.
Right.
I mean.
So Seth, we're going to ask you the same question we ask every guest that comes on. And the first question we ask people is this. What is it that got you into cycling in the first place?
I kind of been riding bikes as long as I can remember. Not like as crazy as I do it now, but having like a department store bike and being down at like Swanson, riding the trails there and doing like the Thursday night taco ride.
Right.
So this is going back a few years, but nothing real serious, just kind of riding around having fun.
What made you get into the serious side?
I used to race dirt bikes, enduros, so some longer stuff. And a lot of the riding here close to town closed up. Our private riding place closed up. So I was kind of looking to like scratch that itch with something else.
Okay.
So then I was like, well, mountain biking's pretty cool. So me and my buddy Brandon, we just started like exploring more and then riding more of the Omaha trails and then just kind of went crazy.
Did you ever ride at that old, what was it? There's some place out in Ashland. It was like a quarry or something like that. And I know they used to do motorcycle trials out there.
No, I didn't do any. Didn't do any riding out there.
Oh, okay.
So did you, as you've started to get into some of the things that you do now that we're going to talk about today, what flipped the switch for you?
I think it was the dirt bike stuff getting closed down, land closing up. And then still wanting to be active and do something that scratches that itch, and mountain bike does that for me.
Sure. And you're a younger person. I mean, in comparison to like Dave here.
Sure.
You're a pup.
I'm right? 2 years away from Social Security, man.
I think I have shoes older than you. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, so. I know I have cycling clothes.
You probably do. I've seen some of the things you wear.
Yeah.
I don't know why you don't get arrested for that, but that's a different topic for another day. But so you've done some pretty crazy races over the last couple of years, and you started getting into more aggressive type competitive races. Let's talk about Leadville.
Yeah, Leadville. I did that last year.
Leadville 100.
Yep.
How high are you when you're doing that?
And
I don't mean just because you're in Colorado. I mean, what is the altitude on that race?
The race starts at 10,000 feet.
Yeah.
And then goes up from there. 12 and a half, I think it tops out at, but it's 100 mile. It's actually like 104 miles. They call it the Leadville 100, but it's 104. And then like over 10,000 feet of climbing.
I would get so lightheaded. I do, because I go hiking in Colorado.
I've skied there. And like
after about 11,000, it's...
Yeah. I started getting altitude sickness in the parking lot. It was so high up there. It was. I mean, you really got to be in shape.
Yeah, the altitude's no joke. I actually had Ken got me. He's my coach.
I was just going to ask, how do you train for that?
Yeah, Ken got me dialed in for that. I did a lot of seat time.
And that's Ken with Kilowatt Coaching.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Ken's been coaching me for a few years now, and it's been a good relationship. He's a good coach, so
okay,
really been enjoying that.
How'd you do on that race?
I did good. I had a time goal sub 9 hours during that big belt buckle, and got it done 8.5 hours. So whoa. I was really so stoked now you, on you, that.
The belt buckle is under 10, though, isn't it?
Nine.
Oh,
nine.
It is under 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So explain the buckle. Are we talking like a big rodeo buckle?
Yep, big rodeo buckle. If you finish the race, there's a cutoff, 12 hours. So you have to be an official finisher, you have to finish in 12. If you finish under 9 hours, you get the bigger belt buckle. So
I could finish in 12. Yeah. I mean, it'd be in a Hertz, but I could do it.
I don't know, man.
I would definitely be done. I'd be definitely done under 10, 12 hours.
I don't know, man.
I'm saying they would take me away in a Hertz because they'd kill me. Yeah, I don't... Right? I mean, it's just, that's grueling. That's grueling.
Yeah, it's a lot of time on the bike for sure.
So if you do the 9 hours, so if you do 12, you get a buckle.
Yep.
If you do under 9, you get the big buckle.
Yep.
How big's the buckle?
It's like, I don't know, like this big.
6x4?
Sure.
That's a pretty big buckle. Do you wear it?
Yeah, I mean, you
no. On,
you got to wear it.
It's rodeo cowboy size.
Well, I know. I mean, that part of Colorado.
You got to go out and get yourself a cowboy hat once you get that belt buckle.
Oh, man.
Because you can't just walk around with that.
Even skiing a steamboat.
And a SRAM hat. I don't know.
With cowboy hats on.
Maybe you can.
How many people get that big buckle?
I'm not sure on the amount of people that come in under 9 hours, but, or even how many finishers there are.
I know Kent McNeil's got a couple of them things.
Yeah, Kent's got a bunch of them.
He's
got a whole collection.
The day that he can't get it, that'll be a sad day.
So, obviously the average person out there is not going to say, hey man, I'm going to go start training for the Leadville 100 because
you're not going to get in, first
of all. Most of us are not insane.
Don't you have to win a race to get into that? You have to qualify.
Oh, do you have to qualify for that?
Well, if you can, there's a lottery that you can apply for.
Okay.
And that's how I got in with the lottery.
Okay. So now with your finish, do you automatically get entered into the next one? Since you get the big buckle?
I don't believe so. I'm not sure
okay
how that works, but...
it is kind of crazy
they have
to even get into Leadville.
Yeah, yeah.
They have qualifying races that you can go do.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought it was, but it's also a lottery?
Well, you could get into the race with the lottery, but to get a corral start, to start up front, or to get a seated place, you have to go do one of their...
Oh, okay.
Qualifying races. So,
you had to start in the corral with all the other cows?
Bulls, Dave. Bulls.
Bulls. Well, there's women doing it too.
I get it, but he's a man.
Okay, fine, man.
And I knew that as soon as I saw
him. It was a cattle reference.
Soon as I saw him walking with that mustache,
I'm from the suburbs,
man. There's a man.
Everything's a cow. Bulls, cows, whatever. They're all cows, okay?
Yeah, they're all cows.
Cowboys west of Fremont call them cattle, but I don't talk to those people anymore. So
multiple is cattle. But so what is it? What do you find most satisfied about this type of racing and riding?
Leadville, I think it was more of a like let's do something really really hard, something out of my comfort zone.
Okay,
and see what that process is going to be like, training for it and completing it. So I think that was the main goal. Let's just do something that makes me uncomfortable. And this definitely made me uncomfortable with the altitude and the amount of climbing. I'm a little bit heavier of a cyclist compared to others.
Right.
So climbing courses is not my strong suit. So,
and that power line climb, is that the hardest part? The power line climb?
Columbine climb is like a 7 mile climb. I think it's like 3,000
feet. Is that before or after power line?
After.
Oh, okay.
I think it's on the return back when you go back up power line.
Oh, when you're coming back down, you've got to go up power line?
Yeah.
So okay. And that's hard one, right?
It's an out and back course. So I think all of it's hard. Yeah. All the climbing. But yeah, there's a couple of the big climbs there.
Dave is clearly 7 mile that part of it climb? Is very easy.
Huh?
Right? You're indicating that part of this race is just really easy. It's just that one climb that's really difficult, right? Is that what you're thinking?
Actually, there's a lot of road to the start, isn't there? There's like 3 or 4 miles of road or even more.
Yeah, there's some road at the start. And then there's a piece in the middle that's flat.
It's not that technical of a race.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just the climbing and the altitude.
It's just a gut buster.
If it wasn't for one descent that's pretty rocky and rooty, you could probably do it on a gravel bike, but I think you'd bleed too much time for.
Okay. So was the training for this, I mean, define or describe how the training for this was a little bit different than some of the other elements you've raced.
So spending a lot more time on the bike and my training leading up to this. So I run marathons also.
Right. And we're going to talk about that.
So my training for this was kind of crazier than normal because 6 weeks after Leadville was my fall marathon race in Berlin.
Oh, wow.
So
The Berlin.
Yep.
Not Berlin, Ohio.
No.
Okay. So I just making sure.
The Berlin Marathon, man. Because
I was in Dublin 2 weeks ago, and that was Ireland. But I was in Dublin last year, and that was in Ohio. So, I mean,
yeah. Just making sure, yeah. Nope. Yeah. Cross the pond, Berlin.
Okay.
So it was exactly 6 weeks after Leadville. So I was still trying to make my fall marathon an A race. So I was going to try to PR in and then get my time goal for Leadville. So I couldn't devote my entire, like, ideally you'd do like two big, long back-to-back days on the bike on the weekend when you have most of your time, since I work a full-time job.
Right.
But I had to devote one of those days to running to keep my base mileage up. So Saturdays consisted of like 7-8 hours on the bike and then 20-mile run on Sunday. And yeah, it was getting to be a lot, especially waking up on Saturday and you're like, man, I'm going to be on my bike for a long time. But I tried to make it fun.
What kind of zones were you in for those really long rides? And also, what kind of zones did you stay in for Leadville?
So those long rides were basically just go zone two.
Okay.
We're going.
But you're not racing zone two. You pretty much can't, right?
No.
It's just too hard.
Yeah. I was probably going a little harder than zone two for Leadville. Like some places when you're climbing, obviously, heart rate's a little higher and then like.
Is it one of those things because of the altitude that if you go too far, too hard, you're going to.
Yeah,
you're gonna pop.
Explain zones.
So I'm not. I don't know how many zones are there now. Are they six or do they say there's seven? Because there used to be five, and they keep making more zones.
Well, it depends if you're talking power or heart rate.
Yeah. So mostly at the time we're gonna be talking about heart rate, though. You know.
Okay.
So a zone one is like the easiest, and like zone six is like a full on maxed out sprint, and just kind of describes, you know, how hard you're going. Okay.
Okay.
So like zone two, zone three, those are like your endurance zones or what we call your tempo zones. And that's something that you could ride, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours at that pace. And you go higher into your higher zones, 4, 5, 6. It's a shorter amount of time that you can stay in those zones because you're going harder. So with the training that Seth and I have done with Ken, it's based on these zones, usually heart rate zones.
So you're utilizing heart rate zones, but you're also dealing with a significant decreased FiO2, the lower oxygen levels. You're looking at probably 17% at that elevation.
Yeah, you know, but your heart rate is going to reflect that too.
Well, yeah, your heart rate's going to reflect it almost automatically. Like if you drive from Omaha to Denver,
you'll notice that your power output in watts is down, but your heart rate is like, you know, 150 and you're down 15 watts or probably more, right?
Yeah, it's a lot less. Your power to heart rate ratio is definitely a lot less power.
So how do you try to condition yourself for that difference in altitude? Is it just by working the zones in a specific way, or did you, I've seen different things out there and I haven't seen any data to support it, but I've seen the guys who wear the masks that decrease the oxygen concentration, which hopefully helps increase hemoglobin and all the other stuff. But so, I don't know if that works or not. I haven't
so
seen
it. So Ken, it does. Ken got his hands on an altitude tent for me. So I slept in an altitude tent for eight weeks.
No way. I didn't know that.
8 weeks leading up to Leadville.
Oh my God.
Which is really cool. And I don't know if you've ever...
You'd sleep at that at night?
Yep.
Yeah. And what kind of altitude did it
So you start off at? You start off at like 5,000 feet.
Okay.
And then you work your way up and you monitor your blood oxygen content.
Okay.
Over,
with like a fitness watch?
With there's a clamp on O2 meter.
Oh, really?
And then also I was tracking it on my Garmin. And so once you start to acclimate to that, and then you would go up in altitude. But basically, it's just this big tent. You throw your mattress in, you zip it up, you throw this hose in there, and then it takes the oxygen out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fun. My wife's a great sport because I was like, should I take this thing downstairs and sleep in the basement for 8 weeks? And now she's like, all right, I'll do it with you. So
she was in there with you?
Yeah, we slept.
Oh my God,
we slept in this tent for 8 weeks.
That is nuts. So your wife got altitude acclimated too. That's so
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
So she puts up with my craziness too, which is awesome.
Well, you got to have that though. You got to have that support. Because what you're doing is, I mean, just so far, just listening to the different levels of training that you're doing, the time commitment, the dedication you have to do with it, the sacrifice, right? That's, you know, you got to have someone who's supporting you along the way.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Nope.
You know, so here's, you know, kudos to Miss Merrick. Right?
Yeah, man, that's baller.
Yeah. She can come into the bikeway. We'll get her free
her
bike.
Her fitness
way
probably went up too, huh? Cool.
What's that?
Her fitness went up too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. She said she noticed. She does Orange Theory Fitness, and
she does.
She said she noticed it at the gym. So.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're increasing your overall hemoglobin.
Okay. Yeah.
By decreasing
from
your oxygen, your body automatically starts to produce more hemoglobin, which is for oxygen transportation. So she's all of a sudden, she's walking out of, or she's getting out of that sleeping tent where the oxygen level, the FiO2, is 19%, 18%, whatever you decreased it to. And she's walking into a gym and she's starting to do exercise where it's 21. So there's more oxygen. So the oxygen heme ratio is she's going to be like in a hell of a lot better shape. Her lung capacity, her VO2 max is going to go up just by using that alone.
Yeah.
So, which is cool.
So all the top pros in cycling have been using, altitude training for years. You mentioned it a few minutes ago. One of the new things that's coming out, that cyclists are doing is CO2. They're breathing in CO2 on purpose, with like gas masks for a significant period of time, like 30 minutes, 45 minutes a day, and this produces a response that you're talking about, like the hemoglobin response.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's just to increase the platelets that are carrying it, your body's response to, lower oxygen levels is, hey, man.
Okay, just for a full disclaimer to anyone out there listening, thinking, hey, I'm going to go do this, just for the record.
Oh, no, this is medically supervised.
Too much oxygen actually stops your heart, and too much carbon dioxide actually causes you to pass out and die. So,
yeah, so this is all, medically supervised, but there is talk that maybe, the UCI should be banning CO2 acclimation, but that's one of the big things that's come out in the last couple of years, that and a drastic increase in caloric uptake on the bike with some new types of essentially sugars that they are using.
Well, if you think about it,
and the altitude
for
and
years
the
and
CO2.
Years and years, the Olympic Committee, the Olympic training grounds have been in Colorado Springs.
Right.
And they
still are, yeah.
And they still are.
That's for multiple sports.
Yeah, and that's because we want to increase the oxygenation of our athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done the Leadville 100, but you also, you've done Dakota 5-0.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, let's talk about Dakota 5-0.
Dakota 5-0 was really fun. It's a good mix of, it's all mountain bike trails. It's a lot more technical than Leadville.
Okay.
Just great trails out there. This is my first year doing it. And I see why so many people from Omaha go up there to do Dakota 5.0 every
year. Sure. It's a blast. Are there, by the way, so at 5.0, one of the things is it's a, they graze cattle out there and they don't stop grazing them during the race at all. So every once in a while you'll run across basically cows right on the path and they don't move, by the way. Are there any cattle up there for Leadville?
I don't remember seeing any cattle. There probably was.
Did you run into any cows at 5.0 before the race or during the race?
I did see some at 5.0.
Oh, yeah?
So 5.0, that's South Dakota Spearfish.
Yep.
Okay. And you know what the altitude is up there?
It's about 5.
About 5?
It's a little under 5 in Spearfish, but when you climb up, to the different mountains, the top, like Baldy, for example, you're just a little bit over 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it was enough to notice. Like, I never thought.
Not
like,
if you're sleeping in an altitude tent.
Well, I wasn't for 5. I wasn't for 5.0, but.
I notice it during the race, like once you get up to the higher elevations, but that's just because you've been going hard for a long time. The 5.0 is, you know, for guys like me, it's, you know, like 5-6 hours. You know.
So how'd you do in that race?
I did good, like right around that 5-hour mark.
Okay. Any problems while you're riding?
I did go off course a little bit. I missed a turn. Maybe it was due to chatting with a fellow rider. I was riding with Andy Arkfeld and doing a little chatting, and we missed an arrow and ended up on a gravel road. And
one of the fire roads.
No, did you finish ahead of Andy?
No, Andy. Andy beat me.
Okay, so you did the Dakota 5.2.
Yeah, a little. Maybe a little
Dakota 5.4.
Yeah, I can't remember how much extra it was, but I do remember doing almost an extra 1,000 feet of climbing. It was like 900
for the overachiever.
Oh my God, that you guys really went off trail.
Yeah, man. We went on this road and we were like,
holy moly.
Taking poles, like climbing up this climb. And then Andy's like, I don't think this is right. I was like, I don't know. I've never.
So you didn't see like the little pink markers with this, the tire treads on them and stuff?
No, it was, we missed it.
So this is, was it both of you, your first year?
Andy's done it before.
Oh, okay. So he shouldn't have gone off course.
I was like, is there this much road in this? He's like, no. So we turned around, came back.
I mean, the fire roads you're on, some of them for, I mean, you know, like 3/4 of a mile or whatever, even longer sometimes after ballpark or aid one, just to connect to different parts of the forest, you know?
Yeah.
So you just did the Dakota back in September of 24?
Yeah, this year.
Okay. You going to do that again?
I'd like to, yeah. I'd like to go back and
okay. It's probably the most fun time.
I think we need
have.
To take the beast up to that.
Oh, totally. We're going to take the beast up next year. We're going to get
time.
Everybody. Yeah. You know, some people go and don't race.
I'm a really good cook. I'll cook and have the beer cold.
You sounds know. Good to me.
You know, you can go right downtown on your bike or walk, you know, in 5 to 10 minutes. And there actually are some nice, I'm not going to say they're Michelin starred restaurants or anything, but some of them are real nice. And you can spend $100 a plate.
Okay.
If you wanted to in Spearfish. It's literally that nice. It's not just a cow town.
So you did, you're going to do Dakota 5.0 again, but you also did a couple other things. You did a 12-hour team race up in, where was that at?
Up in Wausau, Wisconsin. I think I'm saying that right.
Wausau?
Yeah.
What race is that called? That's not Shawamigan, is it?
No.
I don't know what it's called. It's a 12-hour team race in Wausau, Wisconsin.
It's Wausau.
Wausau?
Wausau.
No.
Wausau?
No.
Wausau?
Wausau?
No.
Wausau?
No.
What's up?
See, he wasn't going to stop until he got to full. What's up?
What's up? So you did a 12-hour team race. How many people on the team?
I think you could do all the way up to a 4-person team. Okay. I did a 2-person team with Brandon.
How do they? Oh, so do you split
Brandon
the race
who,
then?
Or? Fenster?
Brandon Farnham.
Oh, Farnham. Okay.
So how do you do that? Like you ride two, he rides two, or you four, can, or four, or what?
It's a loop course. It was like 11 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a long loop, though.
Yeah, it was like an hour loop.
Okay.
And it was a good mix of like technical, a little bit of climbing, some flowy stuff, some fast stuff. Really kept it interesting. But
did you guys have to ride at night at all? Or not?
Yeah, we did get into some nighttime hours.
So what time did it start?
10 a.m. start.
Oh, and okay.
You can race anywhere from like 6 to 24 hours.
Okay.
We were just doing the 12. And we were doing one lap each. So we were trading off every lap. But if you wanted to do two or three laps, you could do it however you want.
So did you guys place in that?
Yeah, we got third overall.
Oh, that's pretty
good. So it's up to 24 hours. So it's the Wausau 24.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the name of the race, is the Wausau 24.
Yep.
Okay.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
You need like four or five guys.
It's kind of like when Teresa Bender was on and she was talking about that 36-hour ride, you know, 500 miles in 36 hours. Or, yeah, something like that. And they're riding all night long. They don't stop.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. So you did that, did pretty well. How'd you guys do in that? How'd you place in that?
The team race?
Yeah.
Third.
I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah, we did good.
Did you get like a belt buckle or anything cool?
No belt buckle. Did get a cool like wooden
case
metal.
Of homegrown beer in Wisconsin that you can only get in Wisconsin, like
Spotted Cow,
Fat Squirrel.
Is Fat Squirrel a thing?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you haven't got Fat Squirrel?
No, I've
Spotted
had Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow is fantastic, but you had the Fat Squirrel?
No.
Oh, Fat Squirrel is really good.
Who makes Fat Squirrel? Is it just Fat Squirrel?
Same company that makes Spotted Cow.
Same
brewery that does that. I've had both. There's a couple.
It's Glarus or Glacier, New Glarus. Glarus.
Glacier. Brew. No, it's
Glarus.
Is it Glarus?
Yeah, that does Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow is tasty.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I like it.
It's good. I brought some of that to 501 one time.
But you brought caseloads home because you can't.
Yeah, get across the state I literally line. Would do that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have a friend who anytime he's in Chicago, he always spends an extra hour and drives over to Wisconsin and buys a couple cases and goes home.
I mean, people do that, but it's not that great.
you know, people have their, you know, different strokes for different folks, right?
Everybody wants something different.
Hey, I brought an 8-pack of Guinness home from the Dublin airport.
Does it taste any different than the Guinness here? Don't start, man.
Unbelievably.
Don't even
my
start.
Mother's grave. It is
I'll
night
give it to you if it's out of
difference.
The tap and, you know, Dingle
no,
Bay
no,
or something
it,
like that. But
because everything in the States is brewed and bottled in Canada, and they just don't get the mixture right.
I think that's pronounced Canada.
Canada?
Yeah.
Well, it's brewed in Canada, and they don't get the mixtures right.
Molson's brewed in Canada. Molson's good.
Probably because they use the metric system, and it screws up everything.
Well, that's how you have problems, because it's an Irish beer, so it should be in, you know, Royal units.
Imperial.
Imperial. Exactly. That's right. That's right. What I was going to say.
I knew you were. Yeah. So, okay. So you've done that. And then you also, with our old friend, Brad Allen, right?
Yep.
What'd you do with him?
Did some like training stuff over the winter. We'd go try to get off the trainer and go to warmer places like Oklahoma and Texas. Went to the Palo Duro Canyon Marathon over the winter.
How long? So when you say marathon, is it 25 miles or?
I can't remember. That was quite some time ago. I think it was like one big loop that was going to take, I don't know, 5 hours or something, or not for him.
It'd be 3.5.
Yeah, he could put some wattage on.
Oh, stupid.
Yeah. Absolutely insane power numbers.
Yeah. And looking at the guy, he was just a big, tall string bean man, but he was an animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how'd that end up? Did you guys do pretty good on that, or?
I think he did pretty well. I DNF'd that one.
Okay.
I crashed the bike and messed up my wrist a little bit enough that I was concerned at the moment. I was like, this kind of hurts to put weight on it. So
was that at night that you crashed or something?
No, just during the day.
Must have been
kind of gnarly, huh?
Yep. Put the bike down.
Was that pretty technical? How would you compare that to like 5.0 or something?
There's some like fast sections there, and it's a lot more loose, I would say.
The soil
in the
under your tires?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a problem for people in the Midwest because, you know, we've got like dirt under our tires all the time.
Yeah.
And when things start breaking away, I mean, I have a tendency to freak out. So.
Oh, yeah, loose and sandy stuff.
I'm not a big fan of that.
Stability is underrated.
Well, the thing is you just don't get that much of your bike moving under you here. And when it does, you're like, that's a panic. Right there for guys like me.
Sure.
But, you know.
So we're gonna take a quick break and do our moment of capitalism. And then we will come back with Seth Merrick. And we're going to talk about some of the other things he's done and what's next. All right. We're going to take a second here to give a shout out to our sponsor, The Bikeway. For a quarter century, the Bikeway has been the premier destination for all things cycling in Omaha and beyond, with a legacy of passion, dedication, and community. Discover the latest and greatest from top brands like Giant, Live, Transition, Santa Cruz, Scott, Bianchi, Sunday BMX, and DK. We've got the perfect ride to fuel your adventure. More than just a shop, explore our extensive selection of apparel and accessories. And the Bikeway Certified Service Department has you covered, from basic maintenance to suspension work to custom builds and everything in between. And while you're here, treat yourself to a delicious cup of coffee. As a rider-owned and operated establishment, you can trust that we're dedicated to providing the best possible experience for fellow enthusiasts like you. So join us at the Bikeway, where every ride is an adventure. Here's to 25 years of riding together and many, many more. All right, and we are back. Once again, we want to thank the Bikeway for sponsoring our show, the Spokespeople Podcast. 25 years in the metro area, serving all your bike needs, anything you need. Come on in and check us out at the Bikeway. Once again, this podcast is actually performed in the bike show or in the bike shop.
And we do it live.
And we're doing it live.
In front of a live studio audience.
In front of a live studio audience, yeah. And we've got Seth Merrick here. See, there's that audience.
There they are.
They're pretty rowdy.
They're crazy.
A couple of them had some spotted cow and a fat squirrel I saw in there.
Yeah. Now if they could just buy
a bike. I saw a fat squirrel drinking a spotted cow.
There you go.
So yeah. There's a reference for you.
And giving you the bird. Hey-o.
There you have it. Uh-huh. So Seth, let's talk about some of the other things that you've done here. So you've done a lot of cycling, okay? You kind of like these large competitive type challenging races and events that you do. But you're also a pretty accomplished marathon runner as well.
Yeah, I've done 14 marathons, some big ones, Boston.
Like on purpose? I mean,
yeah.
Like no one had you at gunpoint or anything like that?
People run on purpose, Dave.
Yeah, willingly running.
Willingly running 25 miles.
26.2.
So you know where the term marathon comes from?
I don't.
Okay. Dave, do you know what the term marathon
yes,
comes from?
Yes, I do. It's a city in Italy.
Wrong.
Okay.
It's in Greece.
Oh, that's right. It's a city in Greece, and one guy was coming back to tell everybody that they had won, and he got back to town, and they were like, "We don't even care." And that city was Marathon.
Okay, so that's really not what happened, but
no, it's pretty much true.
You're
they
close.
Were all like, "Oh, dude, we're over." It
was a messenger who was sent after a significant battle that they had won against Persians, and they ran all the way 26.2 miles to
why does
the
this
city
always
of
have
Marathon.
To involve race?
He announced the fact that they won and then dropped dead of a heart attack, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
I don't
it.
Think he dropped dead.
He
of a
did.
Heart attack.
No, that is true. He did drop dead. He gave the message and dropped dead of a heart attack. His heart stopped, and hence that is why. The 26.2 miles is called a marathon.
Okay.
There you have it.
I like my version better.
There's
where it was
Tuesday
in
night
Rome.
Trivia night right there, so. Right? So we got that covered.
Uh-huh.
So 14 marathons, but you were going to be looking at doing the Abbott World Majors?
Yeah, so trying to collect, there's seven now. They just added Sydney, but they have a six-star medal that you can earn if you do all six Abbott World Majors. You earn their six-star medal. So,
Is running?
Running, yep. Oh, okay. Running marathons. So right now I've completed four of the six. So,
which ones have you completed?
The ones here in the U.S. are the Boston Marathon, okay. New York City, and Chicago.
Oh, and the big three.
Yep.
And well, San Francisco, right?
San Francisco?
Yeah.
Not part of the...
Oh, it's not?
No.
Yeah.
Just
be quiet, Dave. Let the man talk.
I'm going to be quiet.
And then international ones, you have Tokyo, London, and Berlin.
And so you've done the Berlin. You mentioned that earlier.
Yep. I did Berlin 6 weeks after Leadville last year.
So that's the four. So you still have to do London and Tokyo and then Sydney?
Well, Sydney's not. They just announced that one. They added it. So
okay.
They're not doing like a seven-star medal. It's still six. So
okay.
I don't think they've made any changes to that.
But what if you
right
do
now.
Sydney and London and not Tokyo? Do you still get?
No, you got to do. It's you London and Tokyo. So.
Okay. Because I'll go with you to Sydney.
Sydney, pretty cool place.
I have no idea, but my daughter's moving to Australia. So
I have a niece in Sydney.
Give me a reason to go back.
She's pretty cool. Shout out. She's from Wisconsin.
Who set up these Abbott World Majors? Is there an organizing body that does anything like that?
I would assume Abbott. I don't know. Okay. But yeah, they're big marathons, like 50,000 people.
Participants?
Yeah.
How the hell do you have that many? I mean, the earth would shake, so, honest to God.
A lot of run. Yeah, I just got done with Chicago this year. And
how many if you ran over a bridge, 50, it would collapse.
50,000?
You know?
Yeah.
How many were in the Boston?
That one's capped at 30 or 33,000 okay. because they just can't accommodate anymore.
Sure. Those are narrow streets in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you, what year did you do Boston?
I did Boston 22, 23, and 24.
Jeez.
Wow.
What kind of times are you putting out?
My PR right now is 2:49.18.
Wow. I don't think I could ride it that fast.
To qualify for Boston, at the time, I had to run 3 hours to get into that marathon.
Under three?
Under three, yep. So oh, okay. three to qualify to be able to submit an application.
Okay.
And then they start going
is that age rated, those time qualifications? Like
yeah, know? It's based on age and gender.
Okay.
But for the first Boston I did, it was 3 hours for me, sub three. So that was the goal. I had to go get a qualifier to get into Boston.
How long did you run? Were you running before you got under 3 hours for something like that? How many marathons had you done?
Officially, it was my first marathon was like 2014. I ran my first half in 2013, and then 2014, I was like, well, let's try a full. And I didn't train enough. It was miserable. 4.5 hours later, and I was like, you know what? Never going to do this again. And then COVID hit in 2020,
right?
And the local bike racing didn't sound like it's going to happen,
right?
So I was like, well, this is my chance to tackle qualifying for Boston, because it was always a thought, like it'd be cool to do that someday. And cycling, like getting really far into cycling, really helped me lose the weight I needed to lose and get more fit to be able to run faster. And my half marathon time was coming down. So that's when I decided in 2020, I was like, all right, this fall we're training for that sub three and we're going to get it. And then my first attempt, Omaha Marathon, I should have got my official time there, but somebody misplaced the turnaround cone. So it ended up being almost 27 miles.
Oh, geez.
So I ran 3 hours and some change, like when I should have ran like a 2:57.
Okay.
So I should have been like 3 minutes under, and I was 30 seconds over.
Oh, my God.
So that was I was pretty upset about that.
I can imagine.
I imagine a lot of people would be upset about that.
There were, if you go through like the Strava posts after that, and people are like, nice ultra. So it was pretty comical, but.
So. What's next then? What are you going to do now?
I'm going to try to get into London and Tokyo to run those marathons.
Do you have to have specific times to get into those?
For Americans, you can't have a time qualifier. So it's a lottery. So I've applied for London 3 times now and have not gotten in. So
how many do they accept from America? Is there a limit on how many Americans?
I don't know what the number is, but...
It's probably a quota by country too, though, right? Because these seem like they're pretty popular.
I'm sure they have a breakdown on what they allow in. So,
huh.
So yeah, my 2025 marathon season, I didn't. Tokyo and London are both spring marathons. I didn't get into either of those. So.
When do they tell you? Like you apply when, and when do they tell you? And when is the event? How does that go? What's that timeline?
It's usually like 6 months before or something like that.
Okay, they'll tell you.
Everyone's a little different. Yeah, they have an application period. They open up the application.
So there's an actual possibility that you'll never be able to get this accomplished if you don't get it. Because since you're not from the UK.
I could raise money for one of their partner charities.
Oh, it's always the money.
And you could get a charity bib. So you could do it that way.
How much you got to raise?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
Like 10 grand or something?
I don't like asking people for money.
I don't either, man.
It's not my thing.
Dude, you do that. We'll put that right here on the cast. we'll get this set up. No, and here's why.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. It's a money thing.
Look, yeah, so we don't know how much money it is, right?
Yeah, okay, it sounds like it's going to be like a millionaire thing.
Just to update everyone and all of our listeners out there, because this is something we were discussing before the show, we've hit over 1,000 listeners on our show.
Oh, wow.
So I know, right? Kind of blew my mind as well. But the whole point is that, hey, we now have 1,000 people that may say, hey, I'll throw in $5. I'll throw in $10. I'll throw in $5 just so we can see you do it.
Sure.
And then we'll hang a sign in the front in a jar that says, throw money in for Seth. He's a good guy. We kind of like him.
1,000 unique listeners?
Dave, if you're listening, it's automatically classified as
I don't know
as
how
unique.
Many of these are like Canadians or something.
So, yeah, we could do that, man.
So, yeah. we're nationwide?
If it's for a good... Saying? And we're on your side. All if right. We could do this.
I no, mean, that was a ZZ Top reference. Come on, man.
It anyway. might come down to it.
Hey.
Having to ask for money.
We're here to help. It's dead serious.
Yeah, man. Find out how much it is. We can pimp that. That'd be like all the shows.
And I have a ton of friends over in the UK.
Okay.
I actually have a ton of friends over in the UK. I go over there routinely. And so
my niece lives in Wisconsin.
I wonder if any of them have connections on a race bib.
I don't know. After the show, I'll send out an email to my friends over there and see if anyone has one.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of my friends are Northern England, you know, up in that area, Liverpool area, Manchester area, Isle of Man area, you know, things like that, some Scottish. But, you know, do know some people down in the London, Portsmouth area, things like that.
Yeah, maybe they know somebody that can give me a bib. That'd be cool.
Hey, we'll throw it out there and we'll see what we can do. That would help. I can't help you with Tokyo.
We'll help you leave town, man.
I can't help you with Tokyo, though. I don't know anyone in Tokyo.
Yeah. I think
my lottery chances for Tokyo are a little bit better.
Really? Why is that?
Than London.
God, that'd
just
be
what you see online
trip,
for how many Americans that are applying for London, seems like it's a 1% chance to get
Jeez.
In with the lottery.
So London's
so
less than
1%. You could never get in.
Yeah.
What do you think the percentage chance if for Tokyo is?
I'm not sure, but it's got to be.
It's got to be better than
1%.
Yeah. That is crazy. I mean, realistically, it's possible you could never get in.
Yeah.
Just on a, yeah.
On a lottery basis.
On a lottery basis. That's a bummer if you don't make that, you know.
Yeah, so 1% is 500 Americans in a 50,000 person race in London. Mm. Yeah, that's crazy. And what else? So you got those are on your bucket list. You definitely want
to
knock those
out.
I'd like to
get those done. Next year for my racing calendar, I'm going to South Carolina to run the Hilton Head Marathon.
Okay.
In February.
Nice.
This coming February?
Yep, this coming February.
Oh, okay.
Gonna go see
well, that'd be sweet.
Lindsay's aunt and uncle. Be my aunt and uncle too, but
okay.
Go down there for a little family vacation and run a marathon.
Hilton Head's the place, man. It really is awesome.
The pictures I've seen, it looks beautiful.
Do they have marathons
there.
In Cancun? Because like in February, that'd be like...
Right across from the island.
We're going to Cancun.
Well, that's down in Mexico.
I know, but it would still be sweet, though.
It'd be hot.
In February?
It's still hot. I mean, it's still humid and hot.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, man, but it beats like 20 below here.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
40 degrees is good marathon running weather.
Is it?
That's what we're looking for. Like 40, 35 even. I'll take 35.
The most I've ever run, I think is 5 miles.
How'd that feel?
Well, that was back in my 20s and I could easily run 5 miles. But
yeah, I think I'm closer to 10.
We used to do 2 mile run every single day for PT in the Army. And I could do 6.5s. I mean, that was the best I could. I'm not a runner.
So have you thought, do you swim well?
I do not want to do triathlon.
That was the next question. I was like, you already do the run and you already do the biking. What about swimming?
Well, the type of biking I like is off-road.
Okay.
And then the running I like, I don't really enjoy trail running because maybe I have weak ankles. It seems like I roll my ankle every time.
Oh, really?
I try running some of these mountain bike trails that I ride all the time. So.
And that's a good question. How much does biking translate into running and running translate into biking?
Well, I think it's all cardio, right? So I think it definitely helps. Ken's coaching me along now. He's taking care of my running and cycling and strength training. He's doing one-stop shop. So,
okay.
He got me to a sub-9-hour Leadville and two marathon PRs in 1 year. So,
geez, that's good.
That's pretty good.
You know, he had me running too.
We need a sound for Ken.
What are you talking about?
We need a sound for Ken. Like,
don't push buttons.
Like whenever we
trouble.
Whenever we mention Ken all the time.
We do.
We need some type of
No, it has to be something cool.
I know. I'm just saying a sound, though. I'm just like trying to throw something out there.
Have you seen that guy's beard? It's insane.
Dude, it's pretty sick.
It's man strength.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I mean,
yeah, but we use that one a lot, though.
Yeah, we kind of do. Oh, you know what that is, don't you?
Did you just punch a baby? What is that sound?
No, that is actually the classic sound in Star Wars.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. A stormtrooper falling off thing. We found that, and we're like, we got to put this in there.
Stormtrooper falling off of what? In what scene is this?
He gets shot in every scene. No. It's used over and over and over and over again. It's a hidden egg in Star Wars movies.
It is?
It is,
no
yes.
way.
Yes, it is. Drew found it.
I thought the hidden egg was, I got a bad feeling about this.
No. So no iron.
Yeah, probably not going to be an Iron Man.
None.
No.
How do you swim well though?
I don't drown.
Okay. That's kind of important. I think that's one of the pre-qualifiers is do you drown?
Are you drowning? Are you drowning?
Are you drowning? Yeah. So, well, guys, this has been a great show, and we want to thank Seth for coming on and talking to us about all the crazy things that he's done. And we also want to be able to encourage him if there is a possibility of raising funds to do a charitable bib for the London.
Yeah, if he can get a charity bib, we can help him.
People are interested in that.
Well, that's just like crazy money.
Let us know. Send us a question at info@thebikeway.com, and we'll look into it a little bit further. But until next time, everybody.
I'm going to Google it.
Yeah. Until next time, everybody, we look forward to seeing you again with some more topics. I am Dave, your host. Until then, keep riding. Be safe.
Peace.